Welcome to the Savvy Dentist Podcast with Dr. Jesse Green, the show where great dentistry meets great business. Listen in each week as we bring you an inspiring person who will share their story, ideas, and business techniques to help you create a practice and a life you love. And now introducing your host, Dr. Jesse Green.
Welcome back to the Savvy Dentist Podcast, the show where great dentistry does indeed meet great business. Today, I'm really excited to be having a conversation with Oscar Trimboli, who is an expert when it comes to the subject of deep listening. When you read Oscar's bio, it reads like a who's who. He's the author of three books, Deep Listening, Impact Beyond Words, The 125-400 Rule, which is the art and science of listening, and Breakthroughs, How to Confront Your Assumptions. Now, Oscar's worked with heaps and heaps of really large and well-known businesses, including PayPal, Qantas, TripAdvisor, Google, you name it, he's pretty much done it. And today's conversation is going to be all about how we as dentists can improve our listening skills, not just with our team or with our patients, but internally listening to ourselves. And it's my view that listening is probably the most important skill that as a human being we can master, because life is really about relationships. So, Oscar, thank you so much for taking the time to hang with us. How are you today, mate?
Jesse, I'm great. I'm really looking forward to listening to your questions and hopefully being able to provide some productive answers for everybody in the audience. So, straight off the bat, I want to say thank you to you and your profession. At the age of 12 years old, all the way through to the age of 19, I sat in an orthodontist chair because I had a malformed jaw. And I had a very poor opinion of myself and my self-worth, and I had very low confidence. And through the process of having my jaw, my teeth reconstructed, I've got a great smile, and I'm a different person because of that. And I think sometimes you might think you're fixing teeth, but in my case, it definitely changed my entire life.
I think that's a really interesting observation, actually, Oscar, because as dentists, we intuitively understand that the work that we do goes deeper than the teeth, deeper than the jaw, and of course goes straight to the psychological and emotional well-being of the people with whom we're interacting. And firstly, thank you for your lovely words. I'm curious to ask, this is probably not how I had expected to start our conversation, but going through that orthodontic treatment for 7 years, which is a substantial amount of time, it is quite a long treatment plan. What have been your observations of dentists going through the process as a patient?
Look, for me, it's really interesting because I've got a massive investment in my mouth.
You do.
I'm really grateful to both my parents who sacrificed quite a lot to get that sorted out. And as a result, I feel I have to preserve it. My wife thinks I'm way too disciplined when it comes to flossing and mouthwash and everything else that's required for great oral hygiene. And as I say to people, you should have an annual checkup every year when you go and see a doctor. You should get your ears checked when you do that, but also obviously visiting the dentist as well. And I think I've had 7 different dentists over my life. I had a really interesting episode with someone who was over-servicing me. I didn't know that until I saw their name come up in a newspaper because they were being investigated. So sometimes the dentist maybe want to help you out. But I think over that period of time, it's the dentists I remember are the ones that didn't treat me as a set of teeth and an open mouth. They knew I was a runner. They knew I was a swimmer. They knew about my family situation. And more importantly, they knew about my history.
Yeah.
And they took the time not just to understand what I was presenting with, but also what my backstory is. And I felt much more comfortable with the 3 dentists who asked me the backstory. So not just my history. So it would have been obvious to go, you know, tell me your history. And I would have always explained that. But they took the time to understand what that meant for me as a teenager, because you can imagine as a teenager, your physical appearance is developing and your identity is a bit mixed up at that stage, and throw in somebody who's got a jaw that looks like a werewolf. It's not a great place to start off with confidence. So knowing that made the consultations much simpler. People understood why when I present for manual checkup, there ain't not much to do because I take a lot of time and a lot of care to make sure that all my gums are sorted out. I get the teeth have got their own life cycle, but if I can make sure those gums are in a great place, then everything else is kind of built on those foundations. So it's those people who took the time, the dentists who took the time to understand that backstory, yeah, were the ones that I kind of felt really comfortable going back regularly and, more importantly, referring others to. I think that's the business angle on that.
Yeah, there's a couple of nuggets of gold there for anyone listening to the podcast. You know, it really is about relationships and understanding the person on the end of the teeth. And I think that's really critical. And just a little note for your wife, there is no way that you can be over-disciplined when it comes to flossing, Oscar, so you can pass that on to your wife. If she ever challenges you, you can say, no, it's good. I wanted to ask you about your work because you work in the space of deep listening, and I'm curious to understand what deep listening is versus normal listening. What do you mean by deep listening?
Most of us listen in black and white. We hear words and we look at body language. Mm. Deep listening is listening beyond the words. It's listening at five levels of listening. And it's listening to what's not said.
Mm.
The most potent thing you can listen to is what's not said. And
absolutely,
we'll spend a bit of time later on unpicking that. Although we've studied maths, although we studied English and surgery in the case of the people listening right now, only 2% of us have ever been taught how to listen, yet we spend 55% of our day on average listening. And for professions like dentists and orthodontists, practice managers, you're spending anywhere between 60 and 83% of your day listening. So if you want a productivity hack that's going to make you more effective, wouldn't it be great just to learn how to listen? Because I guarantee you, when I'm at a barbecue or at a dinner party, which I will be tomorrow night, and people turn to me and go, "So what do you do?" And I say, I help people understand how to listen beyond the words, it kind of stops the conversation. and people are just like, "Tell me that again." So deep listening is listening beyond the words.
Yeah. I've got to ask, do they actually listen to the explanation of deep listening, or do they fade out?
Well, there's four villains of listening. There's the dramatic listener, there's the interrupting listener, there's the lost listener, and the shrewd listener. So if you think about it through that lens, what will usually happen is a couple of things. They go, "What? Can you say that again?" Because they weren't paying attention. They were a bit lost.
Yeah.
They'll say to me, "You'll have to say that again because I just didn't make sense of it." And people who kind of try and use humor will say things like, "Sorry, you get paid for that?" Mm. And then the by far the most common response is, "Well, I'm feeling really awkward tonight because now I'm going to worry that you're judging my listening for the rest of the conversation." And I said, "Look, just relax. I'm off duty." If you want to talk about how to listen better, I'll send you a copy of the book, but tonight just be yourself. And typically that's what kind of happens. So most of us, Jesse, we're lost even before we come to the conversation. The biggest barrier to listening, I've got a proprietary research database of 1,410 people that we're tracking. The biggest barrier to listening is not focusing on the speaker. The biggest barrier to listening is getting the noise out of your own head, getting the distractions out of your mind so that you can be present and available to listen. So the biggest fallacy of listening is focus on the speaker, paraphrase, not attentively. The reality is, if you're in competition with the movie playing in your head or the soundtrack playing in your head, or you might have just come from a meeting that didn't go so well, or you might have just spoken to a supplier that's delivering something late when they promised to do something, and you've got a whole battle going on in your head, it's impossible for you to be present to listen to somebody else.
So that's a really interesting comment because, you know, I know in my own life, there's lots of thoughts going through my head. It seems like an endless word stream going through my head some days, and I have to physically take some time away to try and quieten the mind and to engage, turn off devices and other things. But if there's more to it than that, what are the things that you would need to do to be able to quieten that movie? How do you turn the dial down on that or off?
Let's spend some time quickly just with the neuroscience of what's going on in your head. Three numbers you need to know: 125, 400, and 900. On average, we speak at about 125 words a minute. I speak a little slower. If you're auctioning cattle, you're probably speaking at about 200 words a minute. You can listen at up to 400 words a minute. So immediately you're programmed to be distracted. You fill 300 words in while you're waiting for the speaker's speed to catch up with the way your brain can process it. And equally, the speaker's frustrated too because they can think at 900 words a minute, but they can only get 125 words a minute out of their head. So the likelihood the first thing that comes out of their mouth is what they're thinking, there's an 11% chance what they say is what they're actually thinking. So I don't know about you, Jess, but at this time of my life, I'm spending more time with a doctor than I have in the past. And if I had an 11% chance of surgery being successful, I'd get a second opinion. Yet very few of us get a second opinion when it comes to a conversation. So understanding those three numbers, we speak at 125 words a minute, we can listen at 400, and there are 900 words a minute we can think, we can start to understand why the next three tactics make sense for you to be present, for you to be in the moment so you're available to be listened to. So the first simple thing of listening is remove the distractions.
Yeah.
Now, if you can switch your mobile phone off, your laptop, your iPad off when you're doing any consultation. When you're meeting with a team member or a practice member, switch it off. If you can't and you're that addicted, switch it to flight mode. At least you won't get the beeps and the buzzes.
Yeah.
So when we look at the database and what gets in people's way, the first thing that gets in their way is the physical distractions of electronic devices. So tip number one is physically remove them. I was working with an executive who traveled nearly 24 hours from the United States to Australia. They walked into a meeting room with 10 CEOs that I was hosting. Yeah. And he sat down at the front of the room around a board table. And just as he sat down, he said, "Forgive me, just bear with me for a moment." He took his phone out of his jacket, he switched it off, and then he walked over to his bag and placed it in his bag. And it's a really interesting role modeling of creating the right environment for listening to take place. So, Jesse, if you were in the room, what do you think would have happened to you if that person who traveled all the way from the US did that?
I would be thinking that person values our meeting. They value our time. They want to be present for the conversation. And it would also make me think I need to be present as well because this person is giving me the gift of their time, their attention. So I would probably model that behavior and make sure my phone was turned off and put aside as well.
Yeah. So there was rustling taking place immediately while Peter was going over to his bag. 7 out of 10 people walked to place their devices in bags, and probably the other 3 probably put them in flight mode is my guess. But what happened at the end of the meeting was even more powerful for me and a great reminder. One of the CEOs reflected, the fact that we were all present and listening, we had a dramatically different conversation from the one I thought we were going to have, and it's been much more productive for me. So thanks to everybody for sharing and listening. So as leaders in our practice, what we need to do is set the tone when it comes to listening. And it's as simple as sometimes the distraction in the practice might be the music you're playing in the background. If you play music in the background, there may be ambient distraction as well. Now, when the drill's going, you can't do too much about that. I don't think that's going to be a listening barrier, to be deadly honest. But being conscious of what the physical barriers are to any kind of listening is really critical. So tip number one, remove any electronic devices and any kind of physical barriers to listening. The way you can test this is if your eyes are at their eye level, your ears are at their ear level as well. So that creates a great listening environment also, particularly if you've got kids. And I know this is a show about business, Jesse, but if you've got kids, always move down to their level. Mm. So look them in the eyes when you're speaking to them. And you'll role model great listening. And this applies when you're physically present, but equally if you're remote, meaning you might travel for work and you might be away for a period of time. If you contact your kids, whether that's with the phone, with audio or FaceTime, again, if you're in a hotel room, for example, be at their eye level. So squat down or sit cross-legged on the floor if you're talking to a child who's under 5.
Yeah.
And that will put you in a completely different mindset from a listening perspective than pacing around the room. Same's true if you're FaceTiming. Please be at their level as well. Mm-hmm. So tip number one, remove the distractions. Tip number two, a hydrated brain is a listening brain. The brain consumes 26% of the blood sugars of the body with only 5% of the body mass. So it's a very hungry organ when it comes to the physical requirements of it. And we place a very high cognitive load on the mind when it comes to listening because we haven't been taught how to do it. And as a result, a lot of us drink coffee. And if you do, you have to drink a glass of water with every cup of coffee you have. And for every hour you're in consultation, I would say as a dentist, you need to be drinking a glass of water. If you're having a team meeting with your practice manager in the group, make sure everybody else has a glass of water too. A hydrated brain is a listening brain. I think not enough of us just pay attention to the physical aspects of setting up the system, which is our mind and our body, to be available to listen. And the last one is an oxygenated brain is a listening brain. The deeper you breathe, the deeper you listen. So for a lot of us, we don't or are not even conscious of our own breathing, let alone our patient's breathing or the team member's breathing. But deep listeners actually notice breathing because it's sending us a couple more clues. In 1993, there was some research in Canada. 410 people were all hooked up to various devices to measure everything from their blood pressure to their heart rate. And what it was trying to do was measure what were the biological elements of great listening. And the ones that had the most productive conversations were the ones with the highest O2 levels, meaning they had the most oxygen in their brain. So for me, when I go and see clients as an example, from the minute I step into the lobby to the time I get into the lift to the time I get to reception, I'm doing 3 really deep breaths really consistently to make sure that I'm present.
Yeah,
I'm there in the moment. So those 3 tips. 1, remove the physical barriers and electronic barriers. 2, water. And 3, just breathe.
Yeah. So I really love those 3 tips. And I think the beauty of those 3 tips is they're incredibly accessible. It's not hard to remove those distractions, whether they be physical or electronic. It's not hard to drink some water. And it's not hard to breathe and to oxygenate.
The words of a Japanese CEO that I work with here in Australia, Satoshi, said to me, "Oscar, very simple, very difficult to practice."
Absolutely. Though. I was just about to say it's a simple but not easy process, right? So it's like meditating, you know, it's a simple concept, but it's actually really hard to do well.
Yeah. So just like meditation, it's not a place that you go to. It's not that corner at 5 a.m. in the morning. Mm-hmm. Meditation and done well is just something you integrate into everything you do. Like I meditate when I eat my breakfast. I meditate when I eat my lunch in preparation for this call. From the time I pressed the meeting request that opened up the software, there was a quick moment of intention to go, what's my intention for those who are listening right now? Mm. By the way, Jesse, guess what?
What?
People listening right now are distracted.
Probably. They're probably driving.
Yeah. And that's okay. The difference between a recreational listener and a deep listener isn't that they get distracted. It's they notice they're distracted quicker and come back into the conversation.
Yeah.
If I could give a plug for an awesome book about habit formation, it's Atomic Habits by James Clear, a New York Times bestseller. And going in 12 months will sell 1 million copies, which is incredibly unusual. So to be a bestseller, you have to sell 100,000 copies.
Yes.
He's on track to sell 1 million. It's probably the best written book I've ever read that's nonfiction.
Yes.
And I've read business books for close on 45 years now. And his way to break down habits into very simple things, he says, you don't rise to the level of your goals. You fall to the level of the systems that support your habits. And I think that's true for us as business people as well as individuals. And it's a great book.
Yeah. I know I've got quite a few friends who have read it who have been imploring me to read it. So I'm going to put that on my reading list today. So I'll get myself a copy. And ladies and gents who are listening, yeah, it's always good to feed the mind. So it sounds like a good book to grab hold of. Oscar, I do want to ask the question because you and I had a bit of an intriguing conversation off air before we started, and I spoke to you about listening to yourself, and you said to me that was the foundational listening. Why is it, apart from the distractions and the clutter we've already addressed, are there any other factors there that impede listening to ourselves? And why is that the foundational part of listening?
I'll start by outlining what are the five levels of listening that a deep listener would go through. So level one, listen to yourself. Level two, listen to the content. Level three, listen to the context. Level four, listen for what's unsaid. And then level five, the ultimate level of meaning, listen for meaning. Mm. You want to listen beyond the words. It's not enough to know what they say. It's more important to understand what they mean.
Yeah.
So for me, you know, sitting in that chair as a very awkward, confused, embarrassed teenager, going through puberty with a malformed jaw, what it meant to me was I just want it to be normal. I just wanted to have a little bit of confidence. I didn't want to be the most confident then. And that was my wish as I went through this process. And when somebody told me probably be together for the best part of 5 to 6 years, I went, oh, goodness, but it's going to be worth it.
Yeah.
They said, it's going to be worth it.
Yeah.
So the foundational part of listening is really simple. Listening's your birthright. At 20 weeks inside your mother's womb, you can distinguish your mother's voice from any other sound in the outside world. And at 32 weeks, you can distinguish Beethoven from Bon Jovi from Viva. But the minute we're born, we come into the world kicking and screaming, and all we do is want to get noticed by speaking.
Yes.
But the most potent thing we can do is listen to ourselves first. What am I bringing to this conversation, and why is that important? When you turn up distracted, you're not setting yourself or the other person or the group you're in up for success in the conversation. So listening to yourself is absolutely foundational, because you can't access any of the other four levels of listening if all you're doing is having a conversation with yourself about the fact that you forgot to buy milk coming to work in the morning as you're driving in. And you need to pick it up on the way home, and then you're on the way home and you've forgotten because you're thinking about what's happened at work.
Mm.
Now, if you actually had to have a conversation with somebody at the same time, you've still got this story going on in your head.
Yeah.
So it's absolutely fundamental, foundational element of listening. Be available to listen. And the way you do that is by listening to yourself and go, okay, what's the noise going on in my head? Let me park that there, let me park that there, and let me come into this conversation with Jesse right now so I can be present to listen to his questions. So that's why it's critical. Without that foundation in place, it's like building a house on sand. It will stand up for a little period of time, but it won't sustain itself over an extended period of time. So it's the most critical foundations to deep listening.
Mm-hmm.
If you're open, I can explore a bit about the other levels of listening.
I would love you to. I'm curious, because I think, you know, it's one thing to say we've got this foundation in place, but I think getting through the other four levels would be really important, because then we can get a bit of a context of what the process looks like. And of course, that context is really important, because patients come to us all the time, you know, with their emotional anxiety levels perhaps elevated and so on. So what I really want to try and do is to make this as practical as possible for the listener, because I think there's some skills there that you'll be able to help with. So thank you. I'd love to hear the other levels.
And we'll do a dance. I'll kind of talk about it from a practice and team perspective, as well as from a patient and a consultation perspective as well.
Perfect.
So when we look at level two, we're saying listen to the content. And this is where most people, so 92% of people in the databases that I've got for research, are stuck at these two levels. These are the barriers. They can't actually get any higher on their listening, because the listening model is progressive. You can't really start to access the higher levels of listening because you haven't mastered the most basic foundational elements. So when we talk about content, we talk about listening to what's said, the audio, watching, body language, and feeling energy. Now, that last one might sound a little different, but it's how people are saying it. And to be honest, in the chair, it's probably the way somebody's holding their spine and their body tension. So how good are you at listening for the energy of the patient as they sit in the chair without you saying a word, without them saying a word, I'm sure when you step into the room, you can notice pretty quickly, are they tense?
Yeah.
Or are they relaxed?
Oh, absolutely.
But a lot of us are too busy because we've just treated the last patient, or we've just dealt with an issue, or we've just had an issue from the practice manager, or we've just taken a phone call from a supplier who's late on delivery, that we just walk straight to the chair and we don't even notice that. So content is energy, it's sound, and it's what you see visually. So listening to the content is making sure you're listening to all three of those. But can you see if you're distracted, Jesse, you can't even notice some of those things.
Yeah, absolutely not. You're going to miss it a mile off every time. Yeah.
So listening for the context, so listening to yourself and listening to the content, everything's about listening to something. What we're listening now at these higher levels, we're listening for the context, we're listening for the unsaid, we're listening for the meaning. So there's some level of your interpretation, which is kind of basic listening, but what we really want to understand is their interpretation. We want to understand their meaning, their unsaid, and their context. So the context is what brings you here today, not just what you're presenting with, but what's your backstory, you know? And I gave you a good example with mine. Yep. Without knowing my backstory, you'd probably be kind of confused why my gum health is so good for someone at the age of 52.
Yeah.
And you'd probably want to understand a bit more. But because you know that, this isn't your average Joe sitting in the chair. He's going to be pretty relaxed about whatever you do inside his mouth. And it's probably going to be a quick consult because you see me pretty regularly.
Yeah.
And I fit kind of probably the model patient, to be deadly honest with you, is my guess. It's like, don't have to tell me how to floss. Don't have to tell me to rebook. I usually try and rebook when they do the follow-up.
Yeah,
I'm doing the rebooking then because I'm too busy to try and figure it out post the event.
You are what we call an A-grade patient, Oscar. Let me tell you that straight up. Someone who refers.
So yeah, probably A+.
Yeah.
So for me, listening for the context also requires a little bit more nuance here.
Yeah.
So bear with me. When I say listening for the context, does the patient or the staff member or the team talk about problems or solutions? Do they talk about the past more or the future more or the present more? Do they talk about themselves as individuals or do they talk about themselves as part of their family, which typically a mother would do more than necessarily a child would do?
Mm-hmm.
So they talk about themselves as individuals or groups. And do they talk in details and sequence and specificity, or they talk in big pictures and stories and wave their hands around a lot? So if you can notice the language they use, it also gives you an opportunity to adjust and notice the way you're communicating with them. Because if they're a big picture person and you're giving them a lot of detail, you're unlikely to have them connect with you at a communicating level of listening and speaking.
Mm.
So for a lot of the practitioners out there, they may give step one, step two, step three, or we'll see you in 1 week, in 3 weeks, and 6 weeks, given what's happened.
Sure.
But the reality is all they might want to know is, look, I want to have great looking teeth for my daughter's wedding photos.
Yeah.
Right?
Totally.
But if we're not listening for the context, we'd never find that out.
No.
And then follow-up appointments are easy. They're not about the follow-up appointment. The conversation is, hey, it'd be really great to see you a month before your daughter's wedding.
Yeah, absolutely. It's not in 6 weeks' time. It's a month before your daughter's wedding, right?
Yeah. And because we're in their context, it makes sense for them.
Mm.
But again, can you see if we're too busy and we're too distracted and we're not paying attention to the story about the daughter's wedding and all we're doing is looking at a bunch of teeth, some gums and some issues, we're missing the point.
Totally.
We're not listening to what matters. And what matters in that meaning is if you listen for the unsaid, you'd ask, tell me more about the wedding.
Mm, yeah.
And what you may discover is they may be in comparison with the other mother-in-law, or they may be great friends with the other mother-in-law. And you can put the context of what a great smile means with the photographer in place there. Yeah. But again, we don't take the time because remember, they're thinking at 900 words a minute on average, and they can only say 125. And if they're in a chair, probably a little bit more difficult as well to say things at that point. So choose the point in the consult where they're more relaxed to answer those kinds of questions. And it's okay to make that short-term investment up front rather than flipping to the next appointment because that's what your calendar has said.
I think that's a really important point, actually, and I don't mean to cut across you there, which probably, I don't know what that says about my listening, but just to bring that into a clinical context for dentists listening to this, because what you've said there, Oscar, is, I think, incredibly valuable. And I just want to highlight that point because my view is that before we put our hands in someone's mouth, this is exactly the conversation that we should be having up front. And of course, as you said, there are times when you want the patient to be more relaxed, where they're more open to that communication. But I can't stress the importance of having these conversations before you put your hands in someone's mouth. Putting your hands in someone's mouth is a deeply personal thing. We do it all day. We're kind of quite nonchalant about it. But for the recipient, it's a big deal. And having this conversation, I think, really gives that context very nicely. So I just wanted to make that point quickly.
And your question says that you're human and you're curious. It doesn't say anything else, Jesse. Don't worry.
See, now.
So they're the five levels of listening. And as you can see, for a lot of people who've never been taught, we're kind of stuck at one and two. And the database and the research that I've done is unpicking how do we make it really simple in that. So a breathing technique, I would imagine, from one appointment to the next, just take three deep breaths and take a glass of water. That's going to ground you and bring you in the presence of the person you're seeing next. When you're in a team meeting and you're about to walk into whatever area you're meeting with your practice manager and your team, encourage them to have a glass of water. Take a couple of deep breaths before you do it. And if somebody else can take the notes for the conversation rather than you as the leader in the room, it's going to make it a much more productive conversation in terms of follow-up actions and the like too.
And again, I think that's critical. My experience with teams and working in the space that I do is invariably business owners, one of their key frustrations is team. And one of the things I've noticed is that almost without exception, frustrations with other people come back to a communication issue somewhere, whether it's a misunderstanding or misinterpretation. And so again, the points you've made, I think, are absolutely gold because it's not only going to improve the productivity of your meetings, it's going to improve your team morale, it's going to improve your team productivity, it's going to improve your team cohesion, it's going to improve every possible metric as far as I can think of, and your team culture, of course, as well. So the benefits of that are far-reaching.
And in the team context, I'd offer one of the most practical tips that teams on the team training courses that I run, when I say, so if the 125-400 rule says we speak at 125, we listen at 400, they think at 900. When somebody says something like, you know, really struggling to get this sorted out with a supplier, what do you think, doctor? Rather than answer that, ask a question.
Yeah.
Because what they've said is the first thing that comes out of their mouth. It's not the most important thing. So questions should be less than five words because anything else is loaded with judgment.
Yeah.
Meaning you're trying to solve it already.
Yeah.
Tell me more about that supplier.
Yep.
Well, blah, 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 blah. And is there anything else? And then you'll hear these magic code words, Jesse. They'll say words like, actually, or they'll say, you know what's really important? Or, you know what I should have told you that I haven't? Actually, what I need to do is, and they will literally solve the problem themselves. But as leaders in our practice, we think we're there to solve them, to fix them, and all we're doing is blocking them being the most successful version of themselves. So when a team member or a team meeting presents with a problem, don't solve it. In fact, don't even ask that person the question. Ask the room the question, hey, has anybody else had this before?
Yep.
And someone will put their hand up. Mary will say, yeah, in the last practice I was in, we always struggle with that supplier. But what we did that was different, blah, 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 and away you go. But what it does is use the listening power of the full room rather than you being the expert every time. And all that does is make you a bottleneck, and you're not that smart, honestly. The room is always smarter than you.
Totally. And what I'm really loving, what you've just demonstrated, is a coaching methodology, right? And it's about coaching your team, asking great questions. And I think that's really, really important.
I think it's just commercially a really clever way to leverage your time as a leader.
Too right.
So that the team eventually goes, the doctor's just asking these three questions all the time. We can ask ourselves that. So let's ask ourselves, and they solve it themselves, and all of a sudden you're redundant.
And your time frees up magically, and you've got a self-managing team, which is fantastic.
And that helps you grow as well, meaning if usually the leader is the bottleneck in the system, and if you can unplug that, the revenue, the time back will flow as a result.
One of my friends has a great saying, and that is the bottleneck is always at the top of the bottle. And I quite like that expression. Oscar, I do have a question for you, because as you were speaking, I just wrote a little note to myself around the five levels of listening. I just want to circle back to that for a second. And this possibly does not relate to the five levels of listening, but I'm curious to understand if it does. And I wanted to understand, where does intuition fit in amongst all of this?
Ironically, the entire way through the five levels of listening.
Mm.
Too many of us are listening in our head and not enough of us are listening to our gut.
Yeah.
I was in a workshop with a pharmaceutical company. I was speaking to 90 people managers, and they ran a site, nearly 500 people. And I was talking about listening, and 30 minutes into the presentation, my intuition said something's not right in this room. And I literally went off script. I turned to the right where the CEO of the site was there. I said, hey, if you're okay, I need to go off script. Do you trust me? And he kind of shrugged his shoulders and goes, what choice do I have? I said, no, you have a choice. I'm just sensing something different will serve the room more. He said, go ahead. But it was kind of like, go ahead, as opposed to, oh, go ahead.
Yeah.
And again, simple words like that have completely different inflections.
Totally.
I said, hey, just quick exercise. Do me a favor. I'm sensing something, but I'm just trying to figure out if I'm sensing the right thing in this moment. Just turn to the person next to you. If this system that we're in right now was a movie, what sort of movie would it be? So they had a chat amongst themselves for 2 minutes. I said, come back, and what's the movies are coming up? Die Hard with a Vengeance, Towering Inferno, Titanic. They were all disaster movies.
Wow.
And I knew in my intuition there was something in the room, but by asking the question, and I've done that other times where you'd go, okay, so if we're Die Hard, which character are you? Are you the villain? Are you the hero? Are you the sidekick? Whatever. When people have permission to speak to something that is a little bit abstract, like a movie or a book, all of a sudden you give them permission to speak freely.
Yeah.
Now, what happened next was the most important thing.
Okay.
So the MD came up, grabbed the microphone. I want to say he pushed me off stage, but he kind of
gentle nudge
made a point that he was center stage and I was not.
Yeah.
He turned to the room and said, I'm so sorry. I don't want anybody coming to work thinking it's a disaster. I don't know how to solve this. I need your help.
Oh, wow.
So the issue was there was some issue in something to do with the manufacturing process that had held up a whole bunch of important medication in quality assurance because something had failed.
Mm-hmm.
And this had been ongoing for a number of months, and it was very, very expensive, millions and millions of dollars.
Mm-hmm.
Within 3 days, they solved this problem permanently, and the reason they solved it permanently is I asked the room the question, who aren't we listening to? And they all, almost as a choir, said, we're not listening to the operators on the manufacturing line, and we're listening too much to the engineers and the experts. And when they went and asked the operators on manufacturing line, they were able to pinpoint it within minutes for them, and they solved something that was taking months and months and months and millions of dollars in 3 days.
Wow.
Not because of me, but because the leader in the room had the humility to say, I need your help.
Yeah.
And if you create a great listening environment, that's the change you can have and create an impact beyond words.
And wow, it takes a lot of vulnerability for the leader of that organization to say that too. So good on him or her who said that.
Yeah, and, it was him, yeah.
Yeah, and wow, I think there's a great place for vulnerability as well. I'm a fan of Brené Brown's work, and that vulnerability creates that openness, that communication. And where do you see vulnerability fitting into the workplace in that regard?
Yeah, in the words of Satoshi, the Japanese CEO that I'm working with. Easy to say, hard to do.
Yeah.
I think it comes with maturity. I think it comes with experience, whether you've had good or not experiences in your life. And as you can hear from that story, that opens up a place and a space for people to speak the truth. Not to fear retribution or worry about risks to their careers or other things like that, Jesse. So if you're a Netflix subscriber, Brené Brown's got her extended TED Talk now up on Netflix, and it's a brilliant one-hour stay show, almost like a stand-up comedy. She makes it very, very accessible. But honestly, for me, it was only 2.5 weeks ago, Jesse, where I'm on a quest to create 100 million deep listeners in the world. And I realized that for the first time in my life, I should ask for help. I'm a very self-sufficient, very self-resilient kind of guy.
Mm. Well, let us know how we can help.
Well, I stood up in front of a room of 50 people. I would call them my 50 biggest supporters. And for the first time in my life, I said out aloud, I want to create 100 million deep listeners in the world to someone other than a one-on-one conversation.
Mm-hmm.
And I said, but I need your help because I don't know how, but I know in this room, from this little pebble that will drop into this lake that is this room of 50 really important people in my life, I don't know what I need help on. I know I want to get to 100 million, but please, can you help me? And the room clapped and I was kind of confused. And wow. Someone stood up at the back and said, we've been waiting for you to ask for way too long. Welcome. Everyone in this room wants to help you, Oscar.
Isn't that great?
A part of me was very emotional, not because of the response of the room. The part of me that was emotional was, how much time have I wasted not asking for help?
Well, there's a good question for all of us, really, isn't it? I think that's a really profound insight you had. And I said we'd be really happy to help you on that quest as well. Ladies and gents, if you've enjoyed our conversation today, and I'm sure you have taken away some absolute pearls of wisdom, please do head across to Oscar's website, which is www.oscartrimboli.com. Have a look around the website. There's a ton of really good resources there. And I think learning the art and science of deep listening is going to be a fundamental skill for all of us, not just in business, but in life, because human-to-human relationships are really what sustain us. It's what gives us meaning and purpose in our life. And at the heart of those relationships is communication. So there can only be good things that come from learning these skills, learning the five levels, understanding, you know, how to be present for ourselves and for our listeners the people with whom we're interacting is going to be fundamentally important. So, Oscar, from all of us here at Savvy Dentist, I want to say thank you to you for being so generous with your knowledge, so generous with your time, and so generous with your wisdom. If you were to leave the audience with any parting thoughts, what would it be?
The deeper you breathe, the deeper you listen.
Okay, very Zen-like, my friend.
Let's keep it simple. Let's make it practical. Let's make it something that someone can practice immediately after they listen to us having a conversation. Jesse, thanks for listening.
Thank you for coming on. I've really enjoyed our conversation and it's been fascinating, engaging, and thought-provoking for me. When we're finished, because I want to make sure that I'm listening as we go, but in my mind, I've got a few little notes I've got to jot down and I'm looking forward to putting that into practice myself. So once again, you're a tremendous human being and I thank you so much for your time.
Thanks for listening.
Cheers.
Thank you for listening to the Savvy Dentist podcast with Dr. Jesse Green. For more free tools and resources, join the free Facebook group. Visit drjessegreen.com/Facebook. And for more episodes, visit drjessegreen.com/Savvy Dentist.